At the end of June, Republican leaders around New York assembled in Albany to informally bless Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin as the party's candidate for next year's gubernatorial election. The GOP nomination is far from locked up, though, as there are other hopefuls who, at least a year before the 2022 primary would be held, are looking to play out the formal selection process. To discuss the state of the party's nomination, the general election, and the Republican Party more broadly in New York, we're joined by State GOP Party Chair Nick Langworthy. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thanks for having me back, Dave.
So during the spring, nearly all the Republican county leaders in the state seemed to endorse Zeldin's bid for governor. So what was the significance, at least within the party, of his straw poll victory earlier this summer?
Well, we started this process earlier than anyone in modern memory can remember because, you know, we have a different primary calendar than we're functioning with. And, you know, one of the pledges I made when I ran for chair was that we were going to tackle 2022 far earlier so we were better prepared to build the best ticket we could since 1994. And we did just that. So April 19th, we had our first gubernatorial forum in Albany. It was our first in-person meeting of county leaders since the pandemic, and it was basically the starter pistol for the gubernatorial derby and the Republican Party. And, you know, Lee Zeldin very quickly wrapped up a lot of endorsements from counties, but candidates, you know, Andrew Giuliani and Sheriff Mike Carpinelli in Lewis County and Rob Astorino, they also have traveled to counties, traveled to states. Derek Gibson's another candidate that's out there campaigning. You saw a lot of early support for Lee Zeldin. So we let that go, and our design was 60 days. We actually let it go a little longer. And the straw poll that was held last week in Albany, I think was very indicative that there is a strong coalescing that's happened around Lee Zeldin's candidacy. He's raised a tremendous amount of money. I think he'll show a very solid quarter as those numbers and disclosures come public very soon. And he is really poised to be the nominee of the party, and we are considering him the presumed nominee at this point.
Is he your preferred candidate, or are you agnostic as long as you can coalesce early around someone?
The parameters that I set forward was that we need to coalesce around a single candidate. It's no mistake in media reminds me often that Republicans haven't won a statewide race. George Pataki ran for his third term back in 2002. I remember it vividly as I was an intern for the governor. I want to return to that period. Us spending resources and having an intramural fight between now and next June is a great waste of those resources. Candidates need to raise $20 to $30 to $40 million to be competitive statewide in New York. It's a very, very expensive place to do business. A week's ads in New York City, where we desperately need to run them, would cost, you know, probably $1.5 million every single week. People need to understand how expensive a statewide campaign is to truly be competitive, and that is why we needed an early start. You know, if I had done as we had done in the past and waited to even consider this discussion until maybe December of this year when local elections were over, you know, we have to turn around and nominate a candidate legally at the end of February, perhaps the first week of March. That is a very quick turnaround, and then the primary would be in June. People necessarily haven't, you know, come to grips with what this new political calendar means for statewide elections. So us starting a year early, having candidates out there running, and having this internal discussion now versus next year, I think is very healthy. Lee Zeldin, I was thrilled when he announced. I think he's an outstanding candidate. He's been an outstanding member of Congress. He served our country in Iraq and served very admirably in the state Senate. He's put together great numbers in Long Island in a purple district. You know, they spent $12 million trying to take Lee Zeldin out of Congress, and he won by, I believe, 11 points. It's that tenacity that's going to be necessary to go win a statewide election, you know, where we're, you know, certainly way down in enrollment, and we need to find crossover votes. Lee Zeldin has always received crossover votes in a critical place in Long Island for Republicans to be successful.
So for comparison's sake, in 2018, Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, who ran as the GOP candidate, didn't declare until the spring of that year. So Zeldin is obviously more than a year ahead of that pace. And you talked about the ability to raise money if you've got more time. Aside from the campaign funds aspect, are there other benefits that you see from coalescing behind a candidate early in the process? And at the same time, are there any downsides you're worried about, like being the target for Democratic attacks for even longer?
We're going to have a great debate of issues across the state of New York for the next, you know, full year and a half. And there are pluses and minuses from starting early. That is, but we already know what the Democratic playbook is, and would be the same playbook that they used on Marcus Molinaro in the 2018 election. But what I hear time and again in my travels is the Republicans always run people that no one's ever heard of. Well, you know, we're not a state that has a lot of statewide name identification. If you look at, you know, public opinion polling as to how many people know the name of our state controller who has served in the office, what, 15 years or 12 years?
Yeah, 14 years.
Barely anyone knows who that person is. It's a very difficult state to have statewide name identification. If you weren't named Pataki or Giuliani, it was very difficult for people to know, you know, who you were for a lot of years. In regionally, that probably is more common. So if a candidate comes from Long Island, they have to spend a lot of time in Western New York, in the North Country, Central New York, the Southern Tier, as well as the five boroughs. It's a big place. I've traveled to all 62 counties in the state. I know what it takes. I've watched Lee Zeldin take 9 statewide trips so far, and he has been to all 62 counties much quicker than I achieved it, you know, when I was running for chairman and serving as chair. So I'm very impressed at the pace that he kept. And that's what, you know, caused me to call him the front runner very early on, because of the pace that he established, the funds that he raised very early. He set the pace, and the other candidates, you know, they certainly are entitled to go through our full convention process, you know, if they really feel that strongly about it, and they have they develop the campaigns and the support they claim they will. I presume some will try to take it to primary. It's a much easier thing to say in July of 2021 that you're going to run a primary than it is to actually execute and run a primary next winter when it's time to petition.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about the 2022 election season in New York, and our guest is State Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy. You mentioned having the additional time to debate the issues, and I was watching your interview on New York Now with Dan Clark, and you talked about the importance of highlighting, you know, I guess mainstream or more moderate issues, saying, quote, we can't run with some right-wing agenda. What does the non-right-wing agenda look like from a future Republican candidate, and what are some of the, I guess, right-wing issues that you want to try to avoid?
Well, we will absolutely put forward a common sense agenda that all of our candidates will run from statewide. I mean, first and foremost, every morning when I wake up and I grab for the news, whether it's Albany News or New York City News or in my home in Buffalo, you know what leads the news is crime, murders, shootings, and this revolving door criminal justice policy that's put in place by to pander to extremists in Albany that run the show here, and extremists in New York City. It has devastated the state, no matter where you're at. Crime is up. And, you know, it's just so laughable to listen to Democrat leaders try to blame the pandemic for shootings, crime, and murder, when the fact is there's no consequences left. You know, people don't have to worry about spending the night in jail or, immediate incarceration anymore. And they're willing to do things they wouldn't do before.
Although, just to be clear, there is still bail eligible crimes in New York, some of those very serious ones you're talking about.
If they're apprehended, sure. For petty crime and people worried about slashings and purse snatchings and things, you know, and the reason that Times Square is now a national embarrassment, that is because of this asinine policy that defies all common sense. So So we are going to fight to return this. You know, I said that in the New York Now interview, and I say it often. You know, I'm a realistic political leader. I know that New York is not going to become a right-wing experiment or laboratory of ideas, but we need to restore common sense to the state. We have been pandering to a narrow band on the left for far too long. Every time Andrew Cuomo gets into political trouble, he hands over more, and I'm sure it is against what he believes. I believe he's smarter than his governance, because we have taken the tools away from law enforcement to do their jobs. We have, you know, created a less safe New York, and we need to restore public safety. That is going to lead any campaign in New York at this point. And then we have to talk about taxes. Let's get real. You know, this is a state where we are hemorrhaging population. We lose another seat in Congress, and almost every day I talk to someone that is in the process of becoming a Floridian or, you know, moving to Tennessee. People that are close to retirement are not looking to stay in New York. We're exporting, you know, some of our upper earners. You read, you know, the stories of our financial houses that are looking to Florida and Texas and other places to basically repatriate and avoid New York state taxation. This state and these Democratic politicians that hate the wealthy so much are addicted to the wealthy's tax revenue. So if we're going to spend as much as we do, we're the highest tax state in the nation, how are we going to pay for all these generous programs? So these are the things to restore the economy. And then education is going to be front and center as well, because what parents and students have had to deal with for the last year is a travesty. And we need to really take a hard look at how we're running our schools in this state and bring some more common sense and parents back into the forefront.
Are there any issues that you think could be a distraction that might typically be things that people on, say, like the far right really care about, like social issues, things that you don't really want to wade into, that you think, you know, a candidate who runs as the party standard bearer should try to avoid?
Well, certainly, you know, any sort of primary will drag any party to the right or to the left. I mean, you've seen that in New York City in this primary. But what do you know? The guy that's still leading the charge was the Law and Order candidate, which gives me some hope for humanity. But you have, you know, absolutely issues that are there that can unite people of all party affiliations. You know, it's not lost on us in the Republican Party that we have to get independents and Democrats to vote for our candidates to win in this state. You can't just get there playing to your base in New York. You have to have a message that unites, much like George Pataki did after Mario Cuomo had three terms in office and ran for a fourth. He had driven the state into the ground. I believe the state has been driven into the ground now. And you look at, you know, so many of the statistics within even the Siena poll, which is always very congratulatory of the governor's standing, there's a lot of people that believe this governor's worn out his welcome, and he does have pockets of support in his base that probably keep him going every day. But there's an awful lot of regions of the state and people of all party affiliations that have had enough of this one-party Democrat rule in New York, and they're open to change.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with New York Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about the GOP path to the executive mansion, which recently stopped in Albany for a straw vote of local party leaders who were asked to weigh in on their choice to represent the party in next year's race for governor. The results of that informal voice vote mirrored the endorsements this spring, and Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin was the runaway choice. To discuss the party's chances next year, as well as assess their electoral losses last year in New York, we're continuing our conversation with the state's Republican Party chairman, Nick Langworthy. In order for a Republican to win a statewide election in New York, like you said, given the current enrollment edge of Democrats and the partisan nature of our politics, you're going to need a combination of factors to break your way, including the right opponent on the Democratic line. Given that dynamic, is a weakened Andrew Cuomo your preferred Democratic candidate in 2022, especially, you know, in the wake of maybe a competitive primary on the left that might highlight some fissures within the Democratic Party?
Well, we can control what we can control, and which is just our own process, and we can't decide who our opponent is. I see nothing that is changing my mind that Andrew Cuomo is going to be his party standard bearer. I mean, look to last week, his $10,000 a head fundraiser in New York City. By all accounts, 100, 175 people there, the who's who of the labor elite, the who's who of the, you know, New York City Democratic glitterati, all there lined up to throw money at someone that most in the assembly have called for his impeachment or resignation. He's under multiple investigations from the Attorney General to the State Assembly to the Eastern District in New York. And yet he's so powerful and so intimidating that they're all lining up to throw money at him. I mean, this just shows the corruption that's alive and well in New York State. Any person that had shame would have resigned from his office. And I called for his impeachment very early on in the process because I believe that there was obstruction of justice and a cover-up of the 15,000 nursing home deaths that should chill every New Yorker to the bone. They'd lie about the deaths of our most vulnerable. They would lie about anything. And we don't have the moral authority to govern the state anymore. Now you have leadership appearing at press conferences with Cuomo at this point. He is going to be his party's nominee unless he decides he's not. Unless there's handcuffs involved, I believe Andrew Cuomo will be the nominee of this party. And we are going to take every element of this last 12 years and put it on trial for the people of the state of New York.
So sticking with the special sauce you're going to need to put together to win in 2022, a GOP operative who's smarter than me made the case that Zeldin is probably the best of the traditional Republicans the party could nominate, but stressed that with any traditional Republican in New York, there's going to be a ceiling, and the party would have been better off with a wild card. They suggested, maybe jokingly, former Yankee closer and Hall of Famer Mariano Rivera. What do you think of the idea that traditional GOP candidates have a ceiling that might be somewhere below 50% of the vote? And did you think at all about trying to get a wild card candidate who might have much more higher upside because of a potential crossover appeal? Broader than Zeldin might even have, coming from his purple district?
I mean, we're going to run this on issues. A gimmick candidate for an office as serious as a governor of the state of New York, coming out of a pandemic, coming out of economic crisis, is probably going to be seen as just that, a gimmick. You know, you need someone that has the experience to actually serve as governor, first and foremost. I mean, I take that very seriously. I mean, you know, celebrities, you know, they solve one issue, which is name identification. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't seen Caitlyn Jenner taking off like a rocket in the polls, and she has probably higher name ID than almost anybody but the governor she's trying to replace. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a serious office that requires a serious candidate. And there's some that have said, oh, you know, why haven't you found a billionaire from the private sector that, you know, is stepping up to say that they're going to run? Well, you know, no billionaire from the private sector stepped up to run for mayor of the city of New York, even though New York's in probably, you know, one of its greatest crises in its history at this point. It is fun to sit and speculate from the cheap seats as to, you know, how you can, you know, play fantasy football with politics. But the reality is someone's got to be willing to put their life on hold, their business on hold, their family on hold, and go run for something. It is a difficult, all-encompassing task. And I think Lee Zeldin is a stellar candidate. Any of the candidates that have even put their name forward in the Republican Party, I think, would be a far better governor for this time than the current occupant of the office. I think he will face a primary from his left as well. You know, whether it's Tom DiNapoli or I don't see how Tish James runs against him if she's investigating him and going to indict him, but perhaps that's on the table. I don't know how she'll justify that kind of action. But you have all that uncertainty, but it's easier said than done to go, you know, find a wild card to come in. I don't believe there is the ceiling. I think at some point New Yorkers, as we get into hopefully less polarizing times, we will have people looking at their own best interests, thinking about their future, thinking about wanting to keep your family together in one place rather than all having to scatter for opportunity and a better life. It doesn't have to be this way. And we're going to offer an alternative governing agenda that people of all party affiliations can buy into.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about the 2022 election season in New York, and our guest is State Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy. So looking back at the 2020 elections from last year, obviously there are some races to be happy about in New York, winning back a handful of congressional seats that the party had briefly lost control of. But I think there have to be some serious disappointments when it comes to the state legislative races, especially with Democrats growing their majority in the state Senate a little bit. So what did you learn from that experience, which may inform the way you approach 2022?
Well, certainly the mail-in voting was something that we had no playbook on. It had never happened before to this level. We had a lot of very narrow losses in the state legislature. You know, Rob Astorino was one of those that, his race for the state Senate was one that a lot of people had put serious resources into, and it didn't come through again. But the, leading so many on election night, but then watching those leads just go up in smoke in three or four of those seats because of the vast, amount of mail-in voting. Mm-hmm. We won't be caught asleep again in that. Respect. I mean, there was a piece of Republican DNA that said people wanted to vote in person. There was a big piece of Democrat DNA that said they wanted to vote by mail. Democratic operatives did a brilliant job of delivering that vote. I mean, in many cases, for instance, the one seat in Brooklyn, Vito Bruno was our candidate against Senator Nunes. And 100% more votes showed up after Election Day than were collected before Election Day. Normally, that's about 20% that might come in the days following the election. But 100% more ballots showed up. So it was extraordinary just how Democrats were able to, use that apparatus to their full advantage. They won't have that to themselves going forward.
How do you reverse that psychology, though, Nick? Because in that 2020 election cycle, there was a lot of strong messaging from really top Republican national leaders, mostly about the distrust almost of the mail-in process. So how do you reverse that psychology and ensure that you can actually expand your electorate using mail-in voting, which will likely be pretty prominent in 2022 if there's a constitutional amendment approved that will greatly expand no-fall absentee voting again?
Well, and it's been coming for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just the pandemic. It was the pandemic that put it on steroids and expedited it. So it is something that Democrats definitely took full advantage of and delivered their vote, very early. Early voting was still a fairly new concept last year. I think we had only had one local election run on early voting, and early voting, you see more and more Republicans participating in that process. They rejected it early on. I mean, Republicans tend to be very traditional in their approach to things. I have full confidence in our boards of elections because we have bipartisanship. For all the knocks on the Board of Elections that Democratic politicians particularly are making right now in New York City, we have both parties represented at every table. When people are coming to vote, in every counting room, and in every office in the state of New York. That brings me a lot more hope and confidence than, say what we learned out of Georgia, where whoever the county executive or the whatever they call them, mayors or what have you, if it's a Democrat, well, all the employees are Democrats. Detroit, Michigan, same thing. These are just jobs handed out by the mayoralty or the county leadership. That's not how you run a fair election. What we do in New York by having both parties at the table takes that piece out of it, where there's that doubt after the fact. So we certainly got outgunned on mail-in voting. It's something that, we are researching all the different ways to get more Republicans to participate in that process. But the bipartisanship of our boards of elections is critical to ensuring fair elections going forward. And any assault on that, I think that you would have the leadership of both parties fight to maintain the leadership or the bipartisanship at the Board of Elections.
While no longer a New York resident, former President Donald Trump is still inexorably tied to his home state. What role, if any, would you like him to play in the state races next year?
He's certainly someone I, you know, have a very good relationship with. He keeps very close tabs on what's going on in a state that will always be his home. Let's face it, this is where he built his whole career and certainly has vast holdings still. So he's very interested, but I think he's going to be working very hard on restoring a Republican majority to the House of Representatives, and making sure that the accomplishments that he put in place on a governmental level aren't squandered in short order. I mean, to have, some of the progress that we've made as a country, wiped away by, totalitarian control in the Congress is something that he does not want to see. And we're going to see him very active, as you've seen him start to reinstate rallies in places that are going to have key congressional races.
So in terms of New York, though, would you want to see him essentially blanket the state with Republican endorsements, or would you want to see him used more strategically, especially in places, say, where he performed better in the 2020 election?
We haven't really discussed anything going forward in the election. I assume that that'll continue, and those discussions will continue as we go forward. He was very active in the 2018 congressional races, very active in the 2020 congressional races, and I expect that'll continue. So, it's a work in progress, but, we always try to work smart. We have to, put our best foot forward and, run, difficult campaigns to go and put us in the best position to win.
Well, we've been speaking with New York State Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy. Nick, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
And that's our show for today. I'm your host, Dave Lombardo. Our producer in Albany is Peter Wendler. And for more Capital Pressroom content, visit wcny.org/thecapitalpressroom or download past episodes wherever you get podcasts.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.